But I'm very glad to be here. Give the Bergen County branch of the People's Organization for Progress a big hand. Give them a big hand, their leaders, Cliff and Margaret. Power to the people. I just want to start with a quote from Dr. King. It's important to remember today, April 4th, and this may have been stated earlier, was not only the day that Dr. King was assassinated. It was the day that he gave his speech at the Riverside Church in New York City. This was not Dr. King's first speech on the question of Vietnam. Dr. King had been wrestling with this problem for a while. Many people don't know his wife, Coretta Scott King, was somewhat involved in the peace movement and had stated before him her opposition to the war in Vietnam. The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, SNCC, had come out as early as 1963, the March on Washington, in opposition to the war in Vietnam. In fact, John Lewis, who was one of the leaders of SNCC, who is a congressman today, wrote his speech, and in his written speech stated his opposition to the war. His speech was censored by the march organizers. See, it's important to kind of show the big picture, lest we all think we got to this point unscathed and without any struggle. Even within the movement, people were struggling with this issue. And the students in SNCC, the leaders, particularly those like Stokely Carmichael, maybe known to many of you as Kwame Ture, were pushing Dr. King in that position. And King had been wrestling with this position. He made an important speech at the end of 1966. But the speech at Riverside, because he gave it at Riverside and at the time that he gave it, became his preeminent speech. And many of us know it as "Why I Oppose the War in Vietnam." But the real name of the speech was "Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break Silence." Why did he say "A Time to Break Silence"? Because even though the peace movement was in swing and leaders of that movement were speaking out against the war, there were many leaders within the civil rights movement who were not speaking out against the war. See, there was a kind of expedient deal that was made. I know some people don't want me to talk like this. They want me, but you brought the wrong one today. I'm going to say it how I see it. Now, if you see it differently, you come up here after I'm finished and state how you see it. But there was a kind of expedient deal that was made. The deal was civil rights leaders stick to civil rights, leave that Vietnam conflict alone, and President Johnson will be able to ferry the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act through Congress. That was the expedient deal. And Dr. King, before 1967, had reached the point that he was opposed to the war, and he began to discuss this with some of his closest advisors, some of whom are considered the surviving leaders of the civil rights movement today. He discussed it within SCLC. They said, "Doc, leave it alone." Didn't they, Deacon Robinson? They said, "Doc, leave it alone. If you speak out against the war, you're going to jeopardize the implementation of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act." In fact, when Dr. King spoke out against the war, he was openly condemned by other civil rights leaders. And some who weren't really bad people per se, but they couldn't get to the point where Dr. King was. Whitney Young criticized Dr. King. Roy Wilkins criticized Dr. King. Now, I know that might hurt some of us, because I'm a member of the NAACP too, but history is history.
That's right.
And the truth is the whole, as one philosopher said. So it's important for us to understand that King got to this position through a process of struggle. Many of you who are standing here are old enough to remember that period. And it was an expedient deal. But see, there are some leaders who do that which is expedient, and there are some leaders who do that which is right. And Dr. King took his stand against the war in Vietnam. He did what was right. And I'm so glad he did that was right. He did what was right. So this is the anniversary of his assassination, but it's also the anniversary of his speech at Riverside Church. And yesterday was the anniversary of his I've Been to the Promised Land speech, also known as I've Been to the Mountaintop. And I just want to end with the last paragraph. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. And I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you tonight to know that we as a people will get to the promised land. And I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. My eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He gave that speech at, I believe, the Masonic Temple in Memphis, April 3rd, 1968. And the next morning, standing on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel, an assassin's bullet brought Dr. King down. And you know, for a long time, people were saying that this person acted alone. But we can't stand here today and talk about Dr. King and not talk about Coretta Scott King. And Coretta Scott King and family went to court, and a federal district court in 1999 ruled that, in fact, there was a conspiracy to kill Martin Luther King. And so tonight I say that that conspiracy still has not been answered. That's right. And the death of Martin Luther King is still on our agenda. On. And we should still press for justice. That's right. For the King family. We shouldn't rest until this thing is opened up. If it takes 20 years, so what? 30 years, so what? Right. We have to work to make sure that the truth comes out. The people who spoke earlier read from Dr. King's speech, A Time to Break the Silence. And I have to say, I think that although many of us have been active and have spoken out against this war in Iraq, I think that it's a time for some others to break their silence on the war in Iraq. It's a time for many of our pastors to break their silence on the war, just as Dr. King had to break his silence on Vietnam. It's time for many of our politicians and elected officials. Now, I'm not just talking about Congress. If there are towns with council people in those towns, if there are towns that have young people who've been sent away to this war to die on the battlefields of Iraq, we should demand that these council people speak out against the war, that the freeholders speak out against the war, that the county executives speak out against the war, that the state assembly people speak out against the war, that the state senators speak out against the war. Everybody should speak out, should break their silence on this awful, illegal, and immoral war in Iraq. Yes. Because what did Dr. King say in his speech? He says silence is betrayal. Right. If you and I are walking down the street and right in front of us two people are locked in a struggle and one is murdered and we see the murder and somebody comes to us and says, did you see the murder? And you act like you don't know what's that. You are complicit in what? Complicit in the crime. Complicit in the crime. If we stand here and we look over our shores, we look over to the Persian Gulf, and we see innocent people being bombed, innocent children being killed, if we see people being robbed of their homeland, and we say nothing, then we are in betrayal. And we must not be in betrayal, brothers and sisters. We must stand for truth. He said there were seven major reasons why he opposed the war in Vietnam. And, you know, who can come behind Dr. King? You know, I mean, because we can take that speech and all we have to do is transpose the names the places and the dates, and we could apply that speech to what is going on here today. But he said there were seven reasons. What was the first reason that Dr. King said why he opposed the war in Vietnam? He said because there was a facile connection. That's one of Dr. King's words, facile. There was a facile connection. That means a direct connection between the war in Vietnam and the war on poverty. That in fact, the war on poverty was being aborted because all the resources of the government were being spent on the war in Vietnam. In another speech, Dr. King said we were spending $30 billion a year in 1968 on that war in Vietnam. And we were closing down the anti-poverty programs here in the United States. Well, if that was true in 1968, that's true in 2006. We see today our country spending $300 million a day, $2 billion a week, $8 billion a month, $400 billion spent on the wars in Afghanistan and the war in Iraq, closing in on a half trillion, equal to the gross national product of the United States. And yet right here in New Jersey, we're closing down hospitals. We closed down Children's Hospital in Newark. They just closed Irvington General Hospital in Irvington. They closed Montclair Community Hospital. They're getting ready. They're talking about closing down Mountainside Hospital in Montclair. And why? Because there's no money. Let me tell you something. They got $300 million a day for war. They got money to keep our hospitals open. They got money for decent schools. They got money to make jobs. They got money to provide health care for the 40 million people who have no health insurance, can't afford to see a doctor or a dentist. That was the first reason. What was the second reason why Dr. King opposed the war in Vietnam? He said it involved the manipulation of the poor. He said young boys, black and white, were being sent into combat together, were serving in Vietnam together, were body to body on the battlefields of Vietnam, and yet in their own country, they couldn't sit on the same bus together. They couldn't live in the same neighborhood together. They couldn't get equal wages for performing the same jobs. He said this was a manipulation of the poor. And as a champion of the poor, he had to address that. And we see a similar situation today. Situation so terrible in our country that young men find they might have a better chance on the battlefields of Iraq than staying home in the ghetto, than staying in the barrio. They're joining the army because there are no opportunities. In this book right here, Dr. King said the unemployment rate for young black men in 1968 was 24.8%. Today it is over 50% and growing. If we got money for war, we should have money to put these young men to work so they don't have to choose between death on a battlefield or staying home. They should stay here. There should be no poverty draft. That's a poverty draft. When young people have no other opportunity than to join and fight in imperialist war. What was the third reason Dr. King said he opposed the war in Vietnam? He said he could not urge nonviolence at home and support violence abroad. Dr. King said when he went to the young men in the ghettos to enlist their help in the nonviolent struggle for civil rights, and he would tell them to be nonviolent, they would say to him, well, Dr. King, what about Vietnam? Sure. We're not being nonviolent in Vietnam. We're dropping bombs and we're dropping napalm on the Vietnamese. Dr. King had to take pause. He said, our country cannot pose itself as the champion of democracy. He said that the United States in 1968 was the greatest purveyor of violence in the world. And if that was true in 68, my God, it must be true today in 2006. Today we have killed between the wars in the Persian Gulf, the first war, the invasion of Iraq, and the imposition of all kinds of imperialist exploitation schemes on the people of Iraq. More than 1 million people may have died already in Iraq in the last 10 years. Conservative estimates, 100,000 since the invasion. Official estimates of young men that have died, 2,500, with maybe 40,000 wounded. And they had this awful article, not awful in the sense of what was written, but awful in the sense that you had to look at it, of these young men in the VA hospital, no arms, no legs, no genitals, blind, can't hear, almost better off had they perished on the battlefield. How can we stand by and let these young people, now we're sending women as well as men to the battlefield. How can we stand by? If this war is so important, let the members of Congress, let Bush and Cheney send their sons and daughters to fight in this war. If it's that important. None of them, they always send. They always send the sons and the daughters of the working people and the poor people to fight these imperialist wars of exploitation. Meanwhile, they stand back and live lives, essentially, lives of luxury. So today, we see that we are spending more money. Right now, they got Saddam Hussein on trial. Today, they said they want to try him for crimes against humanity. But who gave Saddam Hussein the weapons and the power and the resources to do what he did in Iraq? If Saddam is on trial, Bush should be on trial. If Saddam is on trial, Reagan should be on trial. If Saddam is on trial, Bush's father should be on trial. All those presidents who gave aid and resources, who propped up Saddam, should be on trial, should be standing in the dock with Saddam Hussein. What was the fourth reason that Dr. King said he opposed the war in Vietnam? He said that civil rights does not exclude him from the movement for peace. See, many of us labor in our own vineyards. We got our own separate little struggles. Some of us are struggling for better housing. Some of us are struggling for national health care. Some of us are struggling against the war. Some of us are struggling for education. And in our minds, and sometimes in the minds of others, we should be in these separate vineyards struggling. But I tell you tonight that all those struggles are interrelated, and they all are related to the struggle for human rights. It's one struggle, many fronts. One struggle, many fronts. This was the kind of sight game they were trying to run on Dr. King. Dr. King, aren't you a civil rights leader? You shouldn't be speaking out on civil rights. We are citizens of this country. We have a right to address any issues that we see fit. And no matter if we're at a city council meeting in Teaneck, we want to talk about international issues there, we have a right to talk about international issues there. I've been in some of these city council meetings where people trying to present resolutions to get their council to oppose the war. The town council stepped back and said, we can't deal with that. That's international affairs. That's the purview of Congress. Look, anybody telling you that, when election time comes, you need to get them out of office. If the people want their council to speak out against the war, they should speak out against the war. What was the fifth reason that Dr. King said he opposed the war in Vietnam? He said America cannot be saved so long as it destroys the deepest hopes of men the world over. I mean, right now, we are not just in Iraq, brothers and sisters. Right now, we may be getting ready for another war. What did Cheney say at one point? They said, how long will we fight this war on terrorism? He said it might last 40 years. Yes. These people see a world of war without end. I have three children. A world of war without end is not the future I want for my children. I want a world of peace. Peace for our children to grow up in. peace to realize their fullest potential. Right. We have to make and shape a different future. What was the sixth reason? He said his commitment to the ministry of Jesus Christ compels him to work for peace and the brotherhood of man. Well, I think this is a message to many of our religious leaders. Let me tell you something. Dr. King was trying to live out the principles of his religion. We got to take this religion out of the church and bring it into the struggle for social justice, brothers and sisters. It's time for all of our religious institutions to get involved in this struggle. How can we preach the word of Jesus and ignore the suffering of humanity? How can we preach the word of Jesus, uplift those principles on Sunday, and ignore them the rest of the week? Let me tell you, I don't know. Tell me if I'm wrong, Pastor, but I think if Jesus were alive today, he'd be opposed to this war in Iraq. He might be on the picket line, and he'd be condemned by some of the very people who are holding his name. And lastly, Dr. King said he had to oppose the war in Vietnam because he had to be a voice for the voiceless, a voice for those whose voice was not being heard, a voice for the downtrodden, and a voice for the oppressed. He said he had to be a voice for those in this country who opposed the war and wanted peace, but he didn't stop there. He said he also had to be a voice for the people of Vietnam who were not being heard. We have to be that voice for the voiceless, brothers and sisters. We have to be the voice for peace, even if it's not popular. Look, we're not running for office. We're not trying to do what's popular. We're trying to do what's right. That's what we're trying to do. And it's right to oppose this war. We have to do what's right. And let me tell you, I know the struggle is hard. I know the struggle is long. I know the struggle is difficult, but that's why they call it a struggle. If it wasn't all of that, it'd be a tea party. It ain't a tea party. It's a struggle. It's a struggle. It's hard to fight for justice. But I don't know about you. I'm not punking out. I'm going to stand for what's right, even if I got to stand by myself, even if my family doesn't stand with me, even if the closest people that say they love me don't stand with me. We got to stand for what's right. We can't be weather vanes blowing in whatever direction the wind blows. We have to be the trumpets of conscience. That was the name of Dr. King's last book. Right. We have to be that voice. Why is it when we listen to King, it almost feels like we're listening to the voice of God? Because it was a prophetic voice. Because what he was saying 40 years ago is still relevant today. Right. Let me tell you something. At the end of his life, where was Martin Luther King? Where was he in 1968? He was down there in Memphis, Tennessee, with the garbage.